Welcome in to the Rockies Insider. I'm your Rockies Insider, Patrick Lyons, previewing this Arizona Diamondback series down in the desert. I've got some Rockies notes on top of all of that and some familiar Rockies faces reemerging down in Phoenix. But a couple notes about the Rockies right now. First off, would have to be Adeel Amador back up in place of Tyro Estrada, who did hit the IL during the Blue Jays series with a strained right hamstring. He has just been hampered in every which way so far this season. And you like what he's been able to do when healthy, but unfortunately hasn't been healthy, and he'll more likely than not be back for next season, whether it's on the $7 million option for next year or they decline the option and then he still has another year of control, his final year of arbitration, and maybe that becomes a little bit cheaper. Don't know, but hopefully Adeel Amador will get a much better opportunity here to start. I mean, I think he will because there are no other options right now, especially with Arcia manning the hot corner and Farmer really just being that veteran off of the bench. But Amador, when we saw him before Estrada came back up, I think that was in that window where Ryan Ritter first got hurt and Estrada was on the IL, and Amador looked really good. You know, he fixed his toe tap just a little bit and was definitely performing, had boosted that confidence a little bit. So hopefully this weekend we see a little bit more out of that confident young second baseman in Adeel Amador. It's important to note that in the same week that Colorado sent down first baseman Michael Tolia, and in the same week that they signed, or it was really the same day, they signed first baseman Blaine Crim, picked him up off of waivers from the Rangers. You also have another first baseman with the AAA Albuquerque Isotopes. That's right, Keston Hera, last week was named the PCL Player of the Week, 9-for-22, 409 batting average, with three doubles, one triple, three home runs, eight RBI, and five walks, slashing .303 with a .411 on base percentage and .550 slug since rejoining the Isotopes on June 20th. So where and when is Michael Tolia going to play? The writing is on the wall. I don't know what Michael Tolia's future is going to be in Colorado. It does seem as if the Rockies have moved on from him. Not officially, he's still on that roster, but this offseason, does he get designated for assignment? I think so. If there was a trade out there available where someone was offering the Rockies anything of interest or of value, I think the Rockies, you know, very well would have taken it. But I don't know that there really were too many offers or really too many conversations that happened around Tolia. In fact, I can almost be certain that there really weren't many. I'd said leading up to the deadline, who is Michael Tolia really going to help? And if it's contenders that are calling up non-contenders for their best assets to add for the final 2 months of the season to make a push into October, no team is calling for Michael Tolia. If it's a team that is looking to rebuild, like let's say an Arizona Diamondbacks club, who did pick up a first baseman at the deadline, but someone of their ilk, they very well could have said, you know what, we do have some interest in Michael Tolia, but you would have had to have been creative and you would have had to have led that phone call, because the Marlins, let's say, they could use a first baseman. They always can, seems like. But the Marlins aren't going to pick up the phone and call the Rockies. That's why the Rockies need to be more proactive on the trade front. They need to be more proactive in every which way. They're only reactive. Most of their decisions are a year late, which really means they are 2 years too late, because you need to be a year. You need to make those trades a year before you should have made them and you didn't. So they're almost always reactive. And had they been proactive and pick up the phone, they might have been able to get something for Michael Tolia for a team that wasn't contending, but was still looking to add a really good piece. Now, future is totally unclear for Big Mike. Also down in AAA, Ryan Castillo, after a rough first outing with the Isotopes, has gone 8 1/3 scoreless over his previous five outings. Three hits, four walks, 11 Ks. Pretty good. But a 2.72 ERA overall in the season with nine saves. Do the Rockies need pitching? Well, after giving up 75 runs in the 6-game homestand this past week, tied for the most ever in any 6-game set for this franchise, not to mention 21 home runs in those 6 games, most ever in franchise history. Yes, they absolutely need more pitching. And is Castillo a homegrown player? Yes. Since he was 17 years old, signed out of the Dominican Republic. So at 24 years old, this is how quickly things can change in this organization in particular. And you kind of like it a little bit. You have to like it for the fact that they don't just totally stand by their guns. If someone starts knocking on that door, they will occasionally listen, especially when they need to listen. You know what? At 24 years old, Brian Castillo, I think we will see him debut in the final 2 months of this season for the Rockies. Let's talk about some speed. Braden Ward, he's reached base in 14 of 15 games over the past 3 weeks since his July 1st promotion to AAA. Solid batting average, not a ton of slug, but he is getting on base at a 500 clip with a team leading 14 stolen bases over this span, despite, again, being on this club for a very minimal amount of time. I think Braden Ward could be, I think he's going to be a big leaguer. There's no doubt about it. Is it going to be with the Rockies? It's hard with that clouded and crowded outfield situation that they currently have. So it's for that reason, I don't know that it will end up being with Colorado. Maybe he is a player that does get to make his debut over these final 7-8 weeks. Then he, maybe if they need room, designate him for assignment, maybe we're able to keep him around. But he is a guy that has a very important tool in that speed and the ability to steal bases. So Braden Ward, I think, is going to be a big leaguer at some point here very soon. Cole Carrig, I mean, if you're following me on social media, you've probably already seen the clips at Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB. Cole Carrig, the number two prospect in the Rockies system, according to MLB Pipeline, number two behind Charlie Condon, not behind Ethan Holliday, because Ethan Holliday not still on the list. And you know what? If you are a faithful listener of the Rockies Insider, I'm very sorry, because I did say at the beginning of one of the recordings this past week that I was going to tell you where these prospects that just got drafted, where they would end up. And then I never did. Then the show kind of started to run long, and I nipped it in the bud there. So do I think Ethan Holliday is going to end up being the number one prospect for the Rockies? I do. I do. I don't feel as confident about it as I back in the draft when I was live on a draft show with Blake Street Banner. Make sure you check out those guys. Do a wonderful job, Blake Street Banner, over on YouTube. And I felt a lot more confident that Ethan Holliday would be ahead of Charlie Condon the next time they add the 2025 draft picks, which you understand why they're waiting a little bit after the trade deadline. That makes it just more of a natural shift. Yes, you're waiting close to a month here, but you can say, all right, now you really want to know where these draft picks go? Because if you do it before the trade deadline, they go in one spot and then they get shuffled all around after all of the trades, guys moving ahead of them, behind them. So it does make sense. Be patient, stretches out the content period for sure. But with how well Condon's been playing, it does look a little bit closer. I think Holliday is definitely going to be the number one. I think Max Bellew maybe even features higher than the second pick for the Rockies, J.B. Middleton. So Rockies farm system, again, got some quantity, but that quantity, while it's close in AAA, not getting all the opportunities it needs to. Cole Carrig is a player that, while it feels like he should be joining Kyle Karros in AAA, not there yet. Even if he was there in AAA, this was not going to be the year that he debuts, even though you can argue, hey, what more does this guy need to do? I agree with that. But if you're following me on social media, you've seen some clips of Cole Carrig breaking the Hartford Yard Goats single season record, stole 40 bases. That's what he's up to now. And in the August 1st game from last week, stole second, third, and then a straight steal of home in the same inning. Cole Carrig, keep your eyes on this young man. Also in AA, Jack Mahoney, he has a 2-1 record with a 1.74 ERA through 4 starts in July. Get used to that name. You should see him at big league camp next February down at Salt River Field as one of those big starting pitcher arms that might be able to make an impact in 2026. So Arizona Diamondbacks, let's preview this series. Could it go as poorly as the Jays series? There's no way, right? There's no way. Rockies gave up 45 runs, 63 hits, and 13 home runs in a simple three-game series against not the last-place team in the NL Central. Sorry. I know that comeback was wonderful on Friday night. Not to take anything away from them. And yeah, they were able to win the series, take 2 out of 3 from the Pirates, but that was the last-place team. They're playing the first-place Toronto Blue Jays. And the fact that Colorado had given up 45 runs in those three games, it's actually the most since 2019 when the Cubs scored 47 runs against, coincidentally, or not so much, those same Pittsburgh Pirates. So I don't think there's any way that Colorado has that same kind of a series again, because back-to-back almost record-breaking performances in three-game sets, no way. No way. But let's look at the whole homestand in general, where the Rockies gave up 16 runs last Friday in that crazy comeback win. Incredible. Well, that totaled up with, I want to say, 5 runs on Saturday, and maybe it was 8 or 9 on Sunday. It was 75 total runs over 6 games. Again, if you follow me on social media, you've already seen this. But those 75 runs that the Rockies had allowed during the homestand was the most in any 6-game stretch in franchise history. Incredible. And then I also had to look to see historically where that was. And I believe it was tied for 14th most over any team's six consecutive games. And then the 21 home runs that they had allowed most in Rockies franchise history was tied for something like 21st most in any 6-game set. Crazy. So they just have to be better than that, right? They've got to be. But here's the thing. We're talking about a club that lost 2 of their best relievers at the trade deadline in Jake Bird and Tyler Kinley. You've got Herman Marquez, who went down from the rotation. That's how you get Anthony Molina. And now the closer, Seth Halverson, might be gone for the rest of the season. I would wager that he'll be out for the entire year. I know there's some hope that maybe he could return. But once we get down to the final 2, even 3 weeks of the year, there's going to be 0 point to put him back on the mound. So I just don't see that happening. That's 4 critical pitchers for a club that just doesn't have the depth in the upper minors like we thought, like I thought. I thought the depth was better. And in some ways, it is as good as a lot of us had thought. I mean, look at Warming Burnabell, look at Braxton Fulford. These were not top 30 guys, but they were players who were almost begrudgingly given opportunities. They did their job in AAA, but the door was closed to them. And once Warren Schaefer started to listen for those knocks, hey, the future looked a little bit brighter. We still don't know what the future of Warming Burnabell is going to be or Braxton Fulford. But if you can get everyday regulars out of 2 players like that in your system, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. When Schaefer took over, basically had enough of the veteran in Jacob Stallings, so Fulford got the opportunity. McMahon got traded. That opened the door for Burnabell, kind of. I say kind of because Burnabell's not playing McMahon's position. He's reaping the benefits, really, of Tolia's demise and doing what he needs to do, what Burnabell needs to do in order to continue to get that playing time. Dugan Darnell might be viewed by some in the org as a body, but he's going to battle. He's going to stay a big leaguer and try to put together a respectable big league career, and he very well could do that. He very well should do that. Now, some of the folks in the front office, they're saying for Colorado that, you know, some of these guys just aren't ready. And I honestly don't know if they are or not. Many probably aren't ready. The ones that we were told have the highest ceilings are the ones that, you know, are not getting those opportunities, despite the fact that they're supposed to have the highest ceilings. And these guys that are the afterthoughts, like the Darnells and the Fulfords and the Burnabells, they're the ones that are given this ceremonial opportunity since they're homegrown guys, like I think Brian Castillo very well could be, as I mentioned earlier in the show. But you know what? Those guys are making the most of these ceremonial opportunities. They absolutely are. And I think that's fantastic. And I don't know how much that means for the future of this franchise, but I think if, you know, you give some of these young players a chance, maybe you get something. Maybe you have a lightning in a bottle. I mean, Brendan Doyle was I think a fringy top 10 prospect when he finally debuted in 2023. And while he struggled at the plate offensively, you look at what he was able to do at defense and you go, wait a minute, there's something here. And then you look at what he did in 2024. I mean, Trevor Story was similar to that too. I mean, he was on the fringes of being like a top five. He was somewhere within the top 10 for the Rockies, but he wasn't this huge prospect. He's given an opportunity, earns the opportunity, and he makes the most of it. And just like that, the tides turn for a guy. So I think Colorado is definitely more willing. And in fact, Warren Schaefer said that to me point blank when I asked him last weekend about these guys. And yes, the Rockies need to listen for those players who want those opportunities and are knocking. They might not be kicking the door down like Ryan Ritter was when he finally got that opportunity. And it, you know, did it really only happen because Tovar got hurt? I mean, kind of, but it shouldn't take that kind of banging on a door to get an opportunity when you're a franchise that has nothing to lose and is constantly losing. You have to look for those opportunities rather than trying to win games, singular games with veteran players. It's just not working. And the Rockies have been doing that for a very long time, and it's starting to change. Schaefer has definitely started that change. He's brought about that process, and that's been a positive. That's been welcomed. All right, the probable starters for this weekend. Very hot weekend. I think it's going to be 112 on Friday. Oh my God. That is crazy. I know it's summertime, but it's just not inhabitable, right? How can you live like that? I mean, shoot, it's great the other, you know, 4 or 5 months of the year, but I don't know, man. That when that sun hits the pavement, I've been there in October and it feels like I shouldn't be outside. Like I'm on another planet and I might die at any second. I just don't trust it. It's wild. So Friday, 7:40, late start, Austin Gomber against Zach Gallen. You like that matchup despite both guys being far from their best. You could argue that Gomber's been closer to his best than Zach Gallen. Gomber, 6.18 ERA, not good. But Zach Gallen, the guy who's a perennial Cy Young candidate, right? 5.48 in his free agent season, too. I think the reason why Arizona did not trade him because the offers were not as good as what they more likely than not will get back as a compensation pick. When they give him a qualifying offer, whatever that number is, $22 million, are you going to pay him $22 million with a greater than 5-year rate? Yeah, because it's Zach Gallen. He'll figure it out. It's only 1 year. There's no such thing as a bad 1-year deal. And for a guy that's been such a stalwart in that rotation, it's worth it. So we'll see if Gallen returns, takes that contract for 1 year, or if he goes out in free agency. And hey, you know what? Diamondbacks are able to get a compensation pick. Maybe even they lock him up. Maybe they can get somewhat of a long-term deal. We'll see. Saturday, 6:10, a little bit earlier, you got Bradley Blaylock against Eduardo Rodriguez. And then on Sunday, 2:10, a later day game on Sunday, to be determined against Brandon Pfaadt. Is this where we finally get Chase Dolander to get a start? Is it going to be somebody else? Remains to be seen. Right now, the Rockies are really just trying to find bodies to give opportunities to. We'll see. Diamondbacks, they have lost two in a row entering this series, 3-7 over their last 10, and yet they'll have three of their best on the mound this weekend. They haven't really played great at home or on the road. Better on at home, but by like one game, 27-30 at Chase. You'll get a chance to see some of the players that they acquired at the trade deadline, most notably first baseman Tyler Locklear, second round pick by the Mariners in 2022. He was putting up a monster season in AAA before Seattle dealt him for third baseman Eugenio Suarez. And then Andrew Hoffman, who came over from Kansas City in that Randall Grichuk trade. A simple one for one. 6 years of team control over Andrew Hoffman for 2 months of Randall Grichuk. Hoffman is not a world beater, but guess what? He's a solid right-handed reliever with upside. Nicely done by GM Mike Hazen to get something for what would have been nothing very, very soon. You have to do that with expiring assets. And then finally, there's also two other ex-Rockies. I don't know if you noticed the roster. If you've taken a look, this just a flurry of deals I feel like every 3 days there's another player that I hear and does such and such for the Rangers. And I think, wait, did I know that guy had gotten traded over there? I didn't recall that deal. Like Willie Castro, I keep forgetting that. Oh yeah, I know he got traded before the deadline, like on the earlier side, but oh right, it's the Cubs. I keep forgetting that. But two ex-Rockies going to be down in the desert playing against the Rockies. One actually did suit up for Colorado 3 games, Connor Kaiser. And the other one did not. He was at camp this spring and triggered an option saying, hey, you're not going to put me on the 40-man? I'll go play elsewhere. Jake Woodford in the Diamondbacks bullpen. Check out the Rockies Insider newsletter. It's a real special one. I think you're going to like it. Totally free. Check that out at patrickdlyons.substack.com. At Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB on all the social media platforms. Rockies Insider as well over on YouTube. Appreciate you dropping by and giving me some stupendous momentum. But fortunately, that momentum can only be as good as my next show. So, of course, I'll talk to you tomorrow.